ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, Jez and Jules here, popping in with a bonus little piece about the big news overnight that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has been arrested in the UK. Jules, I couldn't think of anyone better to digest this with than you.
We couldn't not talk about it, Jez. Jez, what was your first thought when you saw that photo of the man formerly known as Prince Andrew, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, in the back of a cop car, lying almost like he was trying to escape the flashlights which were booming in his face from cameras?
He looks completely shocked, right? But shocked. I obviously, like most people, heard about this before the news, just as the news was breaking, before the picture came out.
Yes.
And it was exactly what I pictured he would look like
right
in that moment.
Right.
It's extraordinary.
Almost like he was just gazing into infinity of repercussions, and just the real shock of, like, people have been talking about this for 15 years. His relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, you know, the billionaire who, as we know, took his own life but has been accused of running a global sex trafficking ring. We've had all these documents come out which have implicated Andrew Mountbatten Windsor more and more and more. And it's not just with this latest release of these files. I shouldn't even say just. I was going to say it's not just the alleged child abuse. We know that Virginia Giuffre, who also took her own life, who was one of the most prominent of victims, had said that, you know, he had abused her. Recent allegations, he's been involved in an orgy with underage women. All of this going on. But what he's being investigated for now is alleged misconduct in office.
Okay, so what does that mean? Because, you know, when I thought Andrew, I thought Epstein, the files, mm-hmm. the allegations of sexual abuse. But this then relates to his time in office. Do we know if this relates to the sex trafficking allegations? Do we know if it relates to the passing of information that's sort of separate to that while he was in that role? How much do we know about these allegations?
It is for misconduct in public office, right? So according to guidance that was issued by British prosecutors, this is committed when a public officer, a label that covers this wide range of roles, including elected officials and government staff, willfully neglects to perform their duty or willfully misconducts themselves in a way that abuses the public's trust. And this charge carries a maximum sentence of life imprisonment. So it is for this trading of kind of official documents that he gave to Jeffrey Epstein. In one email, he appears to forward to him official reports about visits he made as an envoy to South Asia in 2010. That were sent to him by his assistant, for example. So there's a number of emails that suggest that when he was working as a trade envoy, and we know that he was in a close relationship with Jeffrey Epstein.
I was just going to say, on that note, this is a close relationship which he repeatedly denied.
Exactly. You know, he voluntarily did an interview with Emily Matlas in which he said the photo that was taken of him with Virginia Giuffre and Ghislaine Maxwell was fake. His fingers look weird. He said that Virginia Giuffre's claims could not have been true because she said that he danced sweatily with her at a nightclub and he doesn't sweat because of a medical condition. He said that the reason that he had gone over, that he was photographed with Jeffrey Epstein in Central Park after Epstein had been convicted of soliciting a minor and procuring a child for prostitution. And can I say, after extensive news reports that had suggested this was the tip of the iceberg, that there are actually many women involved in this and many different accounts.
And so, importantly in that case too, Jules, he entered a plea deal, which meant he could avoid jail time.
So we saw then Prince Andrew saying on television the reason that he had to go and see him in person and stay at his townhouse in Manhattan was because he was too honourable to break up a friendship in any other way. The use of the word honour here. We now know that he has sustained a relationship with him in which he sent emails saying things like, I cannot wait to play some more with you. Play. very unfortunate use of words when you're talking about a pedophile.
So when we've got this natural presumption of innocence when someone's been accused of something, we've overlaid that now with a sequence of events where he's denied having a close relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. And as the files have been released, it puts a big question mark about his credibility, the credibility of his denials of that relationship. So yes, presumption of innocence, but gosh, the evidence just keeps stacking up against him.
Yeah, to some extent hoist by his own petard, right? And we've got to remember he remains eighth in line to the throne still, even after being stripped of his titles, even after being taken from a large estate to one which horrifyingly only has five bedrooms and isn't as pretty as the other ones. We know he's a man who's in disgrace. The fact that he's in legal trouble, I think, was not expected, even though there are a range of investigations against him, currently nine, I think, which we'll get to in a moment. But I think just to think about the scale of this, the shame that's involved for the royal family, we just need to look at, like, when was the last time a royal had a criminal record? Well, we know that in 2001, Princess Anne, who was driving in her Bentley, got caught speeding, had to pay a fine. The following year, 2002, she pled guilty to the something under the Dangerous Dogs Act because her British bull terrier, Dotty, bit two children in a park in Windsor. Before then, it was more than three centuries before we had the bloody times of, you know, Charles I, who'd lost in the English Civil War and was tried for treason and then executed. Didn't work very well for him. But in terms of the modern monarchy, this is absolutely unheard of. Though can I say there are examples, Jez, of royals being called up before the courts. Now, Queen Victoria's elder son, Bertie, who became the king, was called up to a divorce case, Lady Harriet Mordaunt, in which he was cited as one of the men she'd committed adultery with. He completely denied it. And as is so often the case with women who talk about sex crimes or sexual infidelity or sexual activity, she was considered insane and popped away in an asylum. He was also caught up in a case about illegal gambling as well. But do you know who I think, like, the filthiest royal in Victorian times? I have real beef with this guy, Jez. It's King Leopold II. Now, I was merrily researching my book on Queen Victoria. I knew about King Leopold I from Belgium because he was a great mentor to Victoria, really encouraged her in her relationship with Alfred. And then I was reading once the diaries of one of her ladies in waiting. And she was like, Leopold came and she was so disgusted because he had these long fingernails. He grew them so long, they started to curl, right? And I was like, oh, gross. That doesn't strike me as Leopold. Like, Leopold was quite spiffy. And I'm like, really? I couldn't get this detail out of my head. Thankfully, I realized by the end of the day, this was King Leopold II. And when he was King of Belgium, he plundered the Congo. It went from a population of 20 million to 10 million. He was murderous, like just a terrible. The first time the phrase crimes against humanity were used, it was against Leopold II. Why do I mention him now, apart from the fact that I have continuing beef with him? Well, all while this was going on, he was sex trafficking.
Oh.
He was bringing 14 and 15-year-old girls from England to Belgium for his pleasure. When he was 67, he impregnated one of them.
Good grief.
And he was so hated that at his funeral procession was booed and so controversial. The people who have brought prestige, respectability, decency to the monarchy have been two women, Queen Victoria and Queen Elizabeth II, who ruled for, you know, like both essentially spanned centuries, each of them, and who valued family and hard work and didn't get caught up in things. Now, some people could say it, Queen Victoria's affection for her Scottish gillie, John Brown, caused some discussion, but it was certainly a long way from what we're seeing now.
Is this also about the way the public perceives its role in accommodating the monarchy? That, I mean, most people would believe that royals have been up to no good since royals were invented, right?
Mm-hmm.
but the public now expects them to uphold a certain set of values,
yes,
and to uphold the office with unimpeachable integrity.
Exactly.
And to see the king now say the law must take its course, mm-hmm, I think is a phrase that strikes me that in the past people would have thought of the king, the prime minister, as people who are above the law. Indeed, that is the case in a lot of other countries right now, but yes, in the UK, this kind of sense that, no, everyone falls under the law.
No, but Jez, like, you're absolutely right. But under the principle of sovereign immunity in the UK, the king or queen cannot be prosecuted under civil or criminal laws. It is genuinely an immunity. Now, I've been looking this up this morning because I believe this is going to be very much stretched. Let's not forget, the sovereign is the head of the church and also the font of all justice, meaning courts actually derive their authority from the crown. Think about prisoners. They're detained at her Majesty's pleasure or his Majesty's pleasure. Now, there's an article on the British Monarchy website that says, although civil and criminal proceedings cannot be taken against the sovereign as a person under UK law, the Queen is careful to ensure that all her activities in her personal capacity are carried out in strict accordance with the law. Now, as the son of someone who's immune to the law, and as a man who has been known, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, for his entitlement for his whole life, who was caught up with a group of billionaires who, as we know, there have been certain protections simply by virtue of wealth, connections, influence. Look at the plea deal that Jeffrey Epstein struck in Florida. That's a heady confluence of impunity and immunity that has been the air that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has breathed. So when we see him in the back of that car kind of staring into space, you wonder what he's actually contemplating.
Do you know, it also struck me, the irony was the fact that Queen Elizabeth is the one who approved and gave him this job as trade envoy to him kind of more useful, more part of the working royal family. And this is the job that she approved, that she gave him, that has ended up.
And she has also been
with this arrest.
She also was very loyal to him and protected him throughout all of this. Now, there's going to be a tangential question. When King Charles has said that they will fully cooperate and the law must, like, what will be asked of the royal family now? There have been about 160 laws since the late 1960s to which exemptions have been made, extending immunity to then Elizabeth II. And this automatically transferred to Charles on his coronation. And some of them are, like, they don't need to have a passport because passports are issued in the Queen or King's name. Same thing with a driver's license, like how weird they would consider. Think about this one. They also don't have to do jury duty. Fine, I appreciate that. They're also exempt from racial, ethnic, and sexual equality laws. So anyone working for the royal family can't take them to court if they believe they're discriminated against on race or sex grounds. So in 1968, apparently the Queen's head financial manager told civil servants it was not, in fact, the practice to appoint coloured immigrants or foreigners to clerical roles in the royal household. Now, clearly that's no longer the case. But as recently as 2021, the royal household was talking about, okay, or Buckingham Palace was saying, okay, we probably do need to fix this and appoint a diversity chief. That goes to the question that there's been so many exemptions that haven't really been questioned and thought about. So will the royal family be brought in to say, how much did you know? What did he tell you? What conversations have you had? What have you heard from Sarah Ferguson? What have you heard from Beatrice and Eugenie, his daughters?
What answers did you seek? If you had questions,
yes,
what answers did you seek?
And any correspondence. I mean, of course they're exempt from freedom of information laws, but should they be in this
instance?
Even
after they're dead, as you found out many times.
Yes, I have rubbed up against this. You know, but also I've also been quite intrigued by William's as has been quite widely reported, and you can also see in his face of this recent encounter he had with Prince Andrew, William is not having a bar of his uncle. He had a look of steely contempt on his face. When I saw him dismissing or icing Andrew in that way, like, what do they all know? And I think that's going to be something which we may never find out, but will they too be held to account for that? Because what's at stake here, Jez, really is trust in the British monarchy. The same principle that's being looked at with wealthy people in the US is looked at with privileged people in the UK, like the powerful protecting their own. So I'm really intrigued to see how this is going to play out.
There's also been pressure alongside all of this, as the Epstein files have been released in the US, pressure on the UK government, on Keir Starmer, on Peter Mandelson,
yes,
for the mechanism of justice to be seen to be moving. Do you think this takes pressure off them and off that mechanism?
No.
How do you see that playing out?
Imagine being Peter Mandelson, who himself traded official documents and insights as a member of government then with Jeffrey Epstein. It was one of my first thoughts. Oh, he will be quivering in possibly the white underpants we saw him photographed in Jeffrey Epstein's Paris room. I don't know, but he will be wondering if there's going to be a knock at his door. I think it is kind of fascinating how we're seeing accountability in the UK, arguably more than we're seeing in the US. But there's going to be a lot of talk about if this seriously destabilizes the monarchy. And we can see that King Charles went out to an event, a fashion event, just to show still there, still active. They're all going to be motoring around the clock, bring out William and Catherine, who seem to have not a smudge of this, any of this on them, and reassure the people that the monarchy goes on and that they've had scandals before. Sure, this is the biggest, the brightest, and the most disturbing in recent memory, but they will be very much trying to tell us that it's business as usual. And I think a lot of people are going to be asking the question of what precisely does this business entail? All right, Jez, well, it's good to just hop on and digest this news with you. There'll be more to come very soon.
I was literally, probably like you, lying awake at 2 o'clock this morning.
Yeah.
Just thinking, this is one of the biggest stories we will ever cover.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's massive.
Massive. Talk to you soon.
See you then. Bye.
Bye.